the followers of Jesus Christ, the desire to serve the Lord is oftentimes met with the fear of being insufficient. As Paul was writing to the Corinthians, if you know anything about Corinth, Corinth was a trade city. It was an area where all of the religions from the world would come into one place as the traders from all around the world would come. It was a place of much Greek philosophy and teaching of the day. And Paul was struggling with the believers there to convince them not to follow false teachings, especially those from those who were called super apostles. Now, Paul had a problem as he traveled throughout Asia Minor and over into Greece and the areas that he chose to minister in, that there were always those following him trying to discredit not only Paul the man, but his teachings, and sway the people back to their teachings. And this was the battle that Paul was fighting. It's the battle that we fight today in our world today. There's many false teachers, many false teachings. And it's a constant struggle to keep up with the truth of God's word as we go out into the world to minister. Paul lived in times not unlike ours today. We oftentimes turn on the television and we see false teachers teaching us that all we need to do is send in a certain amount of money, or all we need to do is pray a certain prayer, and it soon becomes apparent that they are telling us that our salvation and our faith is based on us and not on God. And these are what we call televangelists. Some of them are good, some of them are not. We need to be very, very cautious, though, in listening to the gospel they preach, making sure that it's not a gospel contrary to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And Paul even had to do something that he considered foolish, and that was boast. And our text today is part of this larger message in 2 Corinthians dealing with the false apostles and how Paul handles them, and how he stands up against the false apostles and the false teachings. He says earlier in chapter 11, I hope you will put up with a little of my foolishness, but you are already doing that. In other words, they were already putting up with much of the foolishness of the false teachings. He's saying, now, I hope you just put up with a little bit of my foolishness. And Paul kind of stepped out of his box a little bit here as he continued to write to them. He says to them, I do not think I am in the least inferior to those super apostles. I may not be a trained speaker, but I do have knowledge, and we have made this perfectly clear to you in every way. Now, the King James Version, when we read that Paul says, I hope you'll put up with a little of my foolishness, the King James Version says, would to God ye could bear with me a little in my folly. And that word folly in the Greek speaks of a senselessness in an egotistical way. That Paul was saying to them that I'm going to be speaking in a foolishly egotistic way here, recklessly egotistic. And he says, I want you to bear with me for a little bit. And he says, I don't think that I am inferior to those super apostles. I may not be the trained speakers that they are, but I have this certain knowledge, and I've made this clear to you before. He was going on in chapter 11 to do his boasting. He says, what anyone else dares to boast about, I am speaking of as a fool in myself, and I also dare to boast about. So he was saying to them, I know I'm being foolish here boasting about myself, but just as those others have boasted about themselves, I'm going to take a moment here, and he's saying to them, bear with me. He says, are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they Abraham's descendants? So am I. Are they servants of Christ? And he says, I'm out of my mind to talk like this. He was stepping out of his box, so to speak. He says, are they servants of Christ? I am more. Why? Because he says, I have worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, been exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. I've been constantly on the move. I've been in danger from rivers, from bandits, from my own countrymen, in danger from the Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at sea, in danger from false brothers. I've labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I've known hunger and thirst. and I've often gone without full food. I have been cold and naked. So what he's saying is, I've been through all this, but yet I still trust Christ. Have they been through all this? And where is their faith? Who are they boasting in? He continues with our text today. He says, all right, I must go on boasting. Although there's nothing to be gained by this boasting, I will now go on to visions and revelations from the Lord. You see, he's laying the foundation for his boasting, that it is not in himself, but that his boasting is in the Lord. He's saying, I'm going to go on boasting, but I'm not going to boast in myself. I'm going to boast in the Lord and in the vision and revelation that he gave to me. He goes on to say, I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven. Now to the Greeks, they believed that there were these different layers of heaven. The first heaven was the heavens of the birds of the air. The second was the heavens of the moon and the stars and so forth. And the third heaven was considered to be the dwelling place of God. So he was saying, this man, he says, I don't know whether he was in the body or out of the body. God only knows. But I know that he was caught up to the third heaven, to the very dwelling place of God. He was caught up to paradise. And he heard inexpressible things, things that man's not permitted to tell. And he says, I'm going to boast about a man like that, but I'll not boast about myself, except about my weaknesses. So he's not boasting that he was the one that was caught up. He's telling this in a way as to not glorify himself as the one that was caught up. And that's what boast means in Greek. And that's what Paul's saying here. I'm not doing this to glorify myself. The word boast in Greek tends to speak of, in a good or bad sense, glorying or bringing joy or rejoicing because of something. So he's saying, I'm not glorying in myself. I'm not claiming joy because of myself or rejoicing because of myself. I'm claiming it because of God. And this man that was caught up in these visions and revelations. And of such a man will I glory, the King James Version says. Yet of myself I will not glory. The super apostles were boasting about themselves. They were going around all puffed up saying, look at us. We have all this knowledge. We have all this wealth. We know everything. Listen to us. Doesn't this over here make sense? They were boasting about themselves, as we do sometimes as Christians and as churches, thinking that we have special privileges or maybe special gifts and special favor from God because we're doing things the right way, we think, or that we have it right as to what we believe. And what happens many times, we end up with what we call eye diseases, or we end up with spiritual measles, so to speak, because we're boasting about ourselves. Look what we've done. Look what we've accomplished. I'm head of this. I'm in charge of that. Paul knew that there was nothing to be gained by boasting about earthly things. So he was going on to heavenly things. He says, I'll boast about a man blessed by spiritual things, but will not boast about my own earthly self unless I boast about my earthly weakness. In other words, his boasting was, it's not me. I can't do this. I'm weak. This is not happening because of me. That was his type of boasting about himself. He was not taking the credit. He was saying it's because of the Lord. And he would have been telling the truth had he boasted about himself. He would have been telling the truth. But he would have been glorifying himself and not the Lord, who was his strength. He says, even if I should choose to boast, I would not be a fool because I would be speaking the truth. But I refrain so that no one will think more of me than is warranted by what I do or say. Even though he had this heavenly revelation and could boast about spiritual things that he had seen and heard, he didn't want to, and he was even kept from boasting or becoming conceited by the Lord. He says, to keep me from becoming conceited because of these surpassingly great revelations, there was given me a thorn in my flesh. Paul calls it a messenger of Satan to torment me. Now, scholars differ on what they believe this messenger of Satan was. Some believe it was a person. Paul calls it an it here. Some believe it was an eye disease that he had, a physical disease, problems with his eyes. We don't know. He doesn't spell it out. But he does say three times, I pleaded with the Lord, take this away from me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. I remember, and so often we fall into this trap, we say, Lord, take this away from me. I can't deal with this, get rid of it. And God says, no, my grace is sufficient. I remember when Jesus prayed in John 17 in the garden, he prayed for the believers and those who would believe, speaking of you and I. Not that God would take them out of this world, but that God would protect them from the evil one. Because his grace is sufficient and can do these things. The Lord knew that it was best to keep his servant humble, because in keeping his servant humble, the glory of the Lord is exposed. People look back and see that the man, the flesh, is insufficient, but that the message and the glory and the fruit of that comes from the Lord, and that the Lord is sufficient. And the reason for this is so that all who saw Paul would know that it was the power of the Lord and not his own strength that made him a strong witness for truth. He goes on to say, Therefore I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, and in difficulties, because when I am weak, and he's speaking physically, humanly, when I am weak humanly, physically, then I am strong spiritually. When I humble myself, and the Bible says, he who humbles himself will be exalted. What Paul was saying was that his testimony was by the power of the Lord, that he was really weak. It was not him, but the Lord working through him that gave him strength, and he was not about to take credit for this. He could honestly say to the believers there, it's not by my power, it's not by my selfish motivation that I come to you. No, he says, I had a revelation, and the Lord gives me power to tell others the truth about Jesus Christ. Unlike the super apostles, Paul said, I am nothing, Christ is everything. Just like John the Baptist, who says, I must decrease so that he may increase. Even though Paul could have boasted or glorified or gloried himself because he had these revelations, he was reminded by this thorn that the Lord allowed in his life that he was still just a man of flesh. And he boasted or gloried in the Lord. So many times, what do? We're busy cursing the Lord about that thorn rather than giving the Lord glory, because he continues to give us grace and strength that's sufficient to carry us on. When he was reminded of or felt weak, he was also reminded that God's grace was sufficient, so that boasting may be in God's grace and not in earthly man's strength. That word sufficient means it's enough to get the job done. It's everything and all that is needed. And he says, when I pleaded with the Lord to take this away, the Lord said to me, my grace is all you need. It's enough. It's everything to get the job done, because my power is made perfect in your weakness. And he says, that's why, for Christ's sake, I delight in my weaknesses and my insults and all the struggles I go through. In other words, Paul's saying, when I remember my weakness, that I'm just a man, it's then that I really become strong, remembering that the Lord's perfect grace is sufficient, perfectly enough for everything in life. I want to ask you this morning, do you feel that way? Do you feel that way in your life about the Lord? Do you think that you can make it on your own? Our world today says, we can do it. It's up to you. The choice is yours. You can do it on your own. All you need to do is buy this book. All you need to do is listen to these tapes. But you can do it. What happens after several months of eating all that food that comes in the mail, and you still haven't lost all the weight, and you don't look like that woman on TV? What are you going to do? Right? What happens after you've tried for so long to kick that addiction and you just can't do it? What happens after you've tried for so long just not to click onto those websites, but you just can't do it? God says, my grace is sufficient. My grace is perfect enough and will carry you through. Of all the followers of Christ we read about, Paul and Luke were possibly the most educated of all of them. Paul was a pure Jew. He was the son of a Pharisee. He was born into an Orthodox Jewish family of Judaism, and sometime around age 13, he was sent to Jerusalem to complete his studies under the well-known teacher of that day, Gamaliel, who was a Pharisee and a doctor of the law. But yet, even though Paul was educated and he knew all that he knew, when he went to them, he writes about in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, "When I came to you, brothers, I did not come with eloquence or superior wisdom, as I proclaimed to you the testimony about God. No," he says, "I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. I came to you in weakness and fear, and with much trembling. My message and my preaching were not with wise and persuasive words, but with the demonstration of the Spirit's power, so that your faith might not rest on men's wisdom, but on God's power." He knew it was foolish to boast about earthly achievements and accomplishments based on our earthly strength. Do you give credit where credit's due in your life? Is God part of your conversation when you share your accomplishments with others? Imagine how it makes God feel when we take credit for our good grades in school, you young people. Imagine how it makes God feel when we take credit for getting the new job, when we take credit for our good health, when we take credit for our bank account or the fact that there's just enough money in there to pay the bills. Or how about something our churches have done, or the fact that our churches are doing so well in attendance and doing so well financially. When was the last time that we openly said to someone, "It's not because of me, it's only by God's grace"? True story. I knew a man who began lay speaking a few years ago and sat one Sunday morning before he was speaking. And as he was sitting, the pulpit up to his right, and he was sitting, the time was coming for him to speak. His knees were shaking, his stomach was turned upside down, and he was praying, "Lord, just be with me, just be with me, just be with me." And he heard a voice. He heard an audible voice, "I am with you. I am with you. I am with you." And I remember that Sunday was on, the message was on Christ the King Sunday. And this man whom the congregation had watched grow up in this church from a little boy, this man was about to stand before this congregation of 200 or so people and challenge those people present as to who was king in their life. Can you imagine how scary that must have been for this young man? Knowing that God's grace is sufficient is the only way one can stand Sunday after Sunday in the pulpit and boast not about the church, not about themselves, but about Christ and Christ crucified. And after all, what else is there to boast about? Because in the resurrected Christ is our strength, not ourselves. Jesus says, "Never will I leave you nor forsake you." His grace is sufficient for us when we're taking care of that little baby and it's keeping us up every night. His grace is sufficient for us when we're taking care of that elderly parent and it's such a struggle. His grace is sufficient for us when we're struggling in school to get good grades and to pass. His grace is sufficient for us when we sit in the doctor's office and hear the bad news. His grace is sufficient for us when we wake up each morning. How many of us wake up and open our eyes and say, "Well, I'm not dead. There's another day. There's a light out there. Praise you, Lord. Thank you for another day." Can I be your servant today? Show me what I can do for your glory. Instead, what do? We wait until we lie on the beds of affliction. We're sick in the hospital saying, oh Lord, why can't you just give me one more day? Or we wait till we sit in the funeral home and our loved one or friend has died and we say, Lord, why couldn't you have just given them one more day? No, we need to be glorying in the Lord and boasting every single day that we wake up. Because it's only by God's grace that we live. Not long after I started my first full-time appointment, did I learn a great lesson about God's perfect grace and our need to trust in Him for strength. Many times I struggled all week long for a text to preach on Sunday. Nothing. I spent time in prayer. Nothing. I would read scriptures. Nothing. The week would go, I'd get busy, be visiting, doing things. Nothing was coming. Saturday, my wife would say to me, do you have your sermon ready for Sunday? I said, I don't have a thing. She says, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to trust in the Lord. I'd go to bed Saturday night, nothing. And I'd say, Lord, you know all things. You know the end of tomorrow. I don't know what you want me to say, but I'm trusting in you like Jehoshaphat. My eyes are fixed on you. And I'd go to bed. Wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning and the floodgates of heaven were literally opened up, pouring out all kinds of information. And I'd jump out of bed and I'd run to my study and I'd write down about 3 or 4 notes in an outline of the main things that the Lord was giving me, and I'd go back to bed. I'd stand Sunday morning in the pulpit and preach from those 3 or 4 lines, not a lot of notes, just 3 or 4 lines, and the text that the Lord gave me for that day. And never did it fail me to stand at the door when people were leaving. Time after time, many would say to me, wow, that was really meant for me today. That really spoke to me today. And you know what that was? It was God saying to me, Mike, my grace is sufficient. It's not you, it's me. And I learned to trust right down to the last minute that the Lord's grace will always abound in our time of need. Folks, we're here, we're where we are because of the Lord, not because of ourselves. We don't even deserve to take the next breath. It's only by God's grace that we see each new day. Grace is a gift or a favor to an undeserving or unworthy servant. And God is the God of all grace. And He says, my grace is sufficient for you. And we sing to God be the glory, great things He hath done. May we in our weakness, may we, all of us in our weaknesses, and we are weak creatures, may we always boast about the Lord's perfect, sufficient power and what the Lord has done for us. May we give Him the glory in our boasting. May we refrain from boasting about ourselves so that no one will think more highly of us than the Lord. May we decrease so that He might increase. Some quick words from a popular song, Grace Alone, written by Scott Wesley Brown and Jeff Nelson. Every promise we can make, every prayer and step of faith, every difference we will make is only by His grace. Every mountain we will climb, every ray of hope we shine, every blessing left behind is only by His grace. Every soul we long to reach, every heart we hope to teach, everywhere we share His peace is only by His grace. Every loving word we say and every tear we wipe away and every sorrow turned to praise is only by His grace. Grace alone which God supplies. Strength unknown, He will provide. Christ in us, our cornerstone, we will go forth in grace alone.